Hey, what's up, y'all? It's me here, Michael Franti. Just want to let you guys know that we're going to be taking a bit of a production break. Myself and production team at Stay Human Podcast, we've taken 3 whole weeks off to clock some family time during the holidays. We hope that you will too, or that you'll be able to get as much family time in as possible. We'll be back on January 12th, 2021 with more great episodes. We'll see you then. Hey, what's up, y'all? It's me here, Michael Franti, and welcome to this episode of the Stay Human Podcast. I'm super, super excited because it's very rare when you get the chance to meet somebody who has started something and seen into fruition, something that you just think has always been there. And our guest today is somebody who has done that. He's the founder of Whole Foods. He's just an incredible visionary about conscious capitalism and about how business can work to help the world, help the planet, help communities, and help individuals elevate their lives. And so please welcome John Mackey.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's awesome to be here, and I'm super stoked to read your book. I've admired what you've done for so long. And the reason is because when I first started out in music, and I was in a little punk rock band, and we'd drive in a van across the country, and we would stop in towns. At the end of every show, we'd just ask fans, hey, you guys got a place to crash, you know? And then we'd drive a long distance to the next town. And when we'd stop along the way to get food, it was a total shit show. It was like we were stopping at gas stations and buying saltine crackers and sardines because that was the healthiest thing that you could find in any town along the way. And then over time, there started to be little mom and pop co-ops that started to pop up. And even in small towns in mid-America, you could find some healthy food, but it was really, it wasn't in every town and it was hard to come by. But then there started to be Whole Foods, and it started to be something that us as a band really relied on. As Whole Foods started to grow, we would go and we would stop and stock up our tour bus. As many years after I started touring, but we'd stock up our tour bus with things, and we knew it became such a staple in our life that wherever we went, that there would be this place which now has become so iconic. So I just want to thank you for helping to contribute to the health of me personally and our band, and just the enjoyment of the experience of shopping there. But before we get into your work with Whole Foods, I want to just give you a chance to introduce yourself and talk a little about where you come from just as an individual.
Sure. I grew up in Houston, Texas. I'm 67 years old, so I was born in 1953. I grew up in a little suburb outside the main part of Houston. My father was, when I was young, he was a college professor, taught accounting at Rice University in Houston. My mother had been a teacher, but then when she started raising a family, I think it's customary of that era, she stopped teaching and became a full-time homemaker. Very much like a sitcom type of world back in the 50s and 60s that you might have seen on a Leave It to Beaver or Ozzie and Harriet or one of those television shows, the Donna Reed show. That's the way it was. It was very, that's what I thought was reality for the first many years of my life until you grow up. So I went to public high school, went on to 2 universities, which I went back and forth, Trinity University in San Antonio and University of Texas in Austin. I guess one of the pivotal things in my life was dropping out of college when I was 19 and hitchhiking around the country, which really hurt my family and my parents, but was a coming of age for me. Secondly, when I just stopped taking required courses in the university and just started just studying whatever I was interested in, which got me cut off from any family aid, but it was so inexpensive to live back in Austin, Texas, back in the 70s, if you were young and good health and didn't need a car, I just took control of my life. And I moved into a vegetarian co-op when I was 23. I was interested in all things counterculture at that time. So I wasn't a vegetarian when I moved in, but I had a food awakening in the co-op. I got interested in all things organic, all things natural. I became the food buyer for the co-op and learned how to cook, went to work for a small natural food store, fell in love with a young woman, Renee, who I came home one day to the co-op and said, Renee, how about if we open up our own store? And she got really excited about that idea. And not 6 months, 9 months later, we opened up a store called Safer Way. And it was a vegetarian store, vegetarian co-op. I mean, not a co-op, vegetarian restaurant, cafe.
Did you have any, like when you were growing up, your father was teaching accounting. Your mom was also very academic. Was there any like entrepreneurial spirit in your family, or where did that come from? Did you ever, you know, have a lemonade stand as a kid, or was there anything that led you to kind of feeling that you could do your own thing like that?
Good question. I think one of the things that my parents did, it was a gift. They didn't give me stuff. I mean, I didn't get an allowance or anything like that. Basically, they put me to work at a young age. And if I wanted money, then I started working around the yard, mowing the grass, raking the leaves, doing whatever they told me to do. And they'd negotiate a price for the job. And then as soon as I legally could, first I became a counselor in a boys camp when I was like 15 years old, a junior counselor. Then I went to work for Astro World, which was like a Six Flags amusement park in Houston on the Astrodome. And once I got the taste for making money, I could buy records. I could buy the clothes I liked. I could start saving money for a car. I loved the independence that working gave me. And I didn't think about being an entrepreneur, but my father eventually got pushed out of teaching at Rice because he only had an MBA and not a PhD. So he became an accountant, and he ended up becoming CEO of a publicly traded hospital management corporation. So he had a great business background, which really helped me because I never studied business in school. I studied philosophy, religion, literature, all the humanities, basically. So when I started Safer Way, I really didn't know what I was doing. Renee and I was 23. Renee was 19, maybe 24, 20, right around there. And we just had to figure it out on the fly. But I think my dad had a big influence on me because my mother was very upset when I didn't want to finish school. She said, you could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer, you're smart. You want to be a grocer? You know, she was ashamed of me. But my father was always very encouraging. I think because my parents were Depression. They were born in like 1921, 19. They grew up in the Depression. And when my dad was 21 years old, World War II broke out and he was drafted. And they had my sister. They got married when they were very young. And so they had a lot of responsibility at a very early age, coming out of a Depression, going into a World War. And then after that, just trying to have jobs to raise a family was what was all about. And the suburbs were, which people poke fun of today, but back then the suburbs seemed like a utopia. You could have a yard for the kids to play in and garden, and it'd be safe. So I think that entrepreneurship came from my early work habits combined with my father's encouragement. He did not tell me I needed to go back and finish school if I didn't want to. And he encouraged me when I wanted to start up Safer Way that later became Whole Foods Market. But you know what? I was like a duck taken to water, Michael. I'm an entrepreneur. I self-identify as an entrepreneur. I'm very creative. Creating things is so much fun. You're a creative person. You create music. And you know, coming up with new tunes and new songs it's an amazing process, right? Well, coming up with business ideas is similarly sparks me.
What was the hardest thing? Just going back to when you were a kid, what was the hardest thing? Like, was there a moment like as a teenager or some point where you just led you to want to identify with all the things that you described, the counterculture and seeking this other life out? What was the toughest thing as a teenager or as a young kid?
You know, I was a little too young I did not go to Woodstock. I was too young for that. A little too young to have been in the Summer of Love in San Francisco. I come of age in the 70s. So you have the counterculture influences. I suppose it was a couple of things. Reading. I have always been a voracious reader. As I began to read, my mind got open to history, to a bigger worldview. Things were happening. And then beginning to travel, I got exposed to new ideas. Music was a big part of everybody of coming of age, still is, in the 60s and 70s. I remember the first time I was like 10 years old and I heard my first Beatles song. I was like transfixed. It was "I Want to Hold Your Hand." And I never heard music like that before. Music was very revolutionary for my generation. It was no longer Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole. Music, which I've come to appreciate as I've gotten older. But at the time, it was very slow and boring music. So music was like very awakening. Music, books, but also I just taken charge of my own life. When I decided to take charge of my education and stop taking classes that I wasn't interested in, I began to follow my own path in life and my own guidance. And that led me to start the business because I was following my passions. So I think that was a pivotal event. I remember the day it happened. I had this philosophy course I was required to take, and I had required books to get a degree. And that was the whole thing. Get a degree, you know, get a college education. There's propaganda on the TV. If you want to get ahead in life, get a college education. So when I made the decision, which my friends were all upset about, my family was upset about, when I made the decision, I'm not going to read this damn book that I was required to read. And I remember I stood up and threw it down on the ground. I'm not going to read this book. I dropped the course the next day. And from that point onward, I was completely liberated. I just took courses I was interested in. I read books I was interested in. I began to craft. I took responsibility for my own life and never have looked back. And if I had to break away from my parents, my friends, the culture to a large extent. And pretty soon after that, you know, I moved into the co-op and I was exposed to a whole new set of ideas by other young people. There was the whole sense in the air back then of I don't want to say revolution in like what I'm seeing in the streets today, some of that, but I wasn't into that. I was into the revolution of ideas, that from music to we were going to create a new age of love and of we could be a different kind of generation. I think that was what was moved me. I got into alternative spirituality at a pretty early age, began to study Eastern philosophy, I began to meditate, do yoga. All of that's had a huge transformational impact on me over the course of the last 45 years, 50 years.
I love how you describe that you left school, but you didn't quit your education. And I think that that's something that people often miss. It's like they think that dropping out of school is just, you're just saying fuck you to learning, basically. But you described it as really taking charge of your own education.
It's quite the opposite, Michael. I couldn't learn what I was interested in. And so I just took charge of it and I accelerated my learning. College was in the way. It helped wake me up, but then they had all these requirements to do things that wasn't furthering my own personal growth and education. I just took charge of my own destiny. And when I did that, I became free. And I've been free ever since. I'm very much an individual. I'm very much in charge of my own life. I don't do what people say I need to do. And I just follow my own drummer, basically.
Let's talk about Saferway. So you and Renee decide to start this store. And did you have any money? Did you have to get a loan? How did you put it all together in the start?
Entrepreneurs are a little bit like, they're a little bit like panhandlers. Because I was out there begging everybody I knew that had any money, all my friends, my family, friends of my family. But, you know, we're selling dreams. I was so passionate about this. And passionate people, if they're passionate and semi-sane, they attract other people to them. I had such a strong sense of purpose that I drew other people to me that were interested in similar things. So we raised $45,000. We're trying to raise 50. It's what we thought we needed to start the business with, but we could only come up with 45, so we're slightly short, but enough to give it a go. Well, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, we lost half our money in the first year, and we were heading towards bankruptcy. But I read hundreds of business books. I was studying accounting. I got all this education through the School of Hard Knocks, but also because when I made a mistake, I learned from it. And I just learned rapidly. In the second year, we made a profit. In the third year, we relocated to a much bigger location, merged with a store, and changed the name to Whole Foods Market. And that first Whole Foods Market just took off like a rocket ship. It was the highest volume natural food store in the United States within just a few months.
Why do you think it was that?
Great location. Austin was a tremendous location. We were on a main strip road. Safeway and Clarksville, the store that we merged with, already had good following, so we had a good basis for it. And we stopped being vegetarian. Safeway was very pure. It was the ideals of Renee and I. So we didn't sell meat and seafood. We didn't sell alcohol. We didn't sell sugar. We didn't even sell caffeine, no coffee. So we had a very pure store, but we also didn't do that much business. And when we relocated to this big store, which could be a one-stop shopping supermarket back in 1980, literally 40 years ago, we sold all those things. We still were natural and organic, but we sold coffee, we sold alcohol, we sold meat, we sold seafood, we sold chicken, we sold what our generation wanted to buy, basically. And so we met the market where it was at. And we'd raised venture capital money. I'm just skipping ahead a little bit because it's relative to the story. When we raised venture capital money back in 1988, it was hard because we got turned down. Most of the VCs didn't want to invest in our business, although we were profitable, we were growing, we had a good business model. But one VC told me, he said, "John, look, you seem like a really nice young man. You need to get a haircut," because I had a big afro back then. He said, "But you seem to be a good business person, but I don't want to invest because it seems to me that you're just a bunch of hippies selling food to other hippies. And I just don't think that's a big enough market. And if in case I'm wrong and you start, and then I think if you try to compete with Safeway and Kroger and HEB, you're not going to be successful. So I don't want to invest." And he told me about, I ran into him about 7 years later, and he told me it's the single biggest mistake he ever made as a venture capitalist. His Whole Foods took off. But the point is, we were in the early days, if I showed you pictures of myself and the team that we had back then, we were truly just a bunch of long-haired young hippies. And if you look at our customers, they were the same way. What broke Whole Foods Market out of the counterculture was Walmart, because Walmart was beginning to open up super center stores. And they were scaring the crap out of every supermarket chain in the United States. So they were all trying to be more like Walmart, which meant they were turning their stores more look like warehouses. They were just trying to get their prices down and their costs down. The stores were ugly. They didn't give good customer service. So here we come along. We start opening up beautiful stores. They may have been hippies. They may have had tattoos and piercings. But guess what? They took good care of the customers. And we began to get middle-class women coming in who would never have shopped in the store, except the people were so nice to them and the food was so beautiful and it tasted good. So they started shopping with us, and we slowly began to penetrate into the mainstream America. In fact, I always have the old time hippies say Whole Foods sold out, that we abandoned our base. We actually never did. We still, it's just that America started moving our way.
And conscious leadership, you talk about putting purpose first. So what was the original mission statement, or what was the purpose that you guys had?
When entrepreneurs start a business, they don't necessarily, it's all tacit to a certain extent. You haven't made it conscious yet. You haven't made it explicit yet, but you're driven by this powerful passion. And that passion was simple. The original purpose of Whole Foods Market was to sell natural and organic food to people, healthy food to people, and have a lot of fun doing it and earn a living. That's what motivated us. We wanted to earn a living. We wanted to have a lot of fun doing it. We were young and into fun. Yeah, we want to sell healthy food to people. You know what? That's still at the core of Whole Foods Market's purpose. We still have a lot of fun. We still are trying to sell healthy food to people, and we're still earning a living. And the purpose just went deeper over time as we became more conscious. We could make it more explicit. So today we articulate our higher purpose is nourishing people on the planet, which connects up to our food mission, but also our people mission, to our customers, our team members, as well as our environmental mission, as well as our mission to just help the planet Earth evolve in a conscious way. So it was all there, though, 40 years ago. It's just evolved and reached higher into its, it's gone to a greater depth.
Yeah. When you started to scale up, how did you keep the roots, that idea of leading with love and that acting with integrity and the values that you guys had in store one, how were you able to X that over the other stores and still be able to keep that as part of the, you know, the DNA of each store as it popped up?
It's a good question. And I think part of the way Whole Foods was able to do it was we had a lot, I mean, over 40 years, we've had so many crises. Starting in our very first year at Whole Foods, we had a flood. We had 8 feet of water in our store 9 months after we'd opened the store. And we were wiped out. We were bankrupt. Our customers and neighbors came in and cleaned up the store. They loved us. Our team members worked for free while we rebuilt the store. Our bankers loaned us new money. And guess what? I found out later, the banker that loaned us the money, I found out just about 5 years ago, I ran into a guy. And he said, that was quite a thing Mark Monroe did for you back after the flood. And I said, yeah, it was really great that the bank loaned us that money. He said, yeah, but you don't know the whole story. And I said, well, what's the whole story? And he said, your loan was turned down by the bank. He worked for the bank. This guy was telling me this. Your loan was turned down. And I said, well, we got the loan. He said, yeah, Mark Monroe, the banker, personally guaranteed the loan. Because he said he knew John Mackey would spend the rest of his life paying this loan back. So we were saved by our stakeholders. Our suppliers gave us new inventory. We should have died. It was a near-death experience. And Whole Foods has had several type of crises like that. And getting your face slammed into the dirt repeatedly teaches you a little bit of humility. Many times entrepreneurs become successful and hubris kicks in. Their egos get completely out of control. And I think every time my ego began to get a little bit out of control, the universe would intervene and kick me really hard. I'd wake back up again to what really matters in life. All that philosophy I studied, right? All that Eastern philosophy, the spiritual practices I was doing, these all helped me and still help me today try to live a more conscious life.
One of the things that I find just incredible about Whole Foods is that I always thought, man, you know, you talk about Safeway, but if Safeway would just like stock organic foods, they could kick everybody's ass. If Walmart would just stock organic foods, they could kick everybody's ass. That's what I was thinking when I was shopping at Rainbow Grocery in San Francisco.
I love Rainbow Grocery.
Yeah, great store. Now Safeway does have organic foods. Now Walmart does have organic foods. But you guys were able to hold on to this customer experience that was so much better than what they could provide. Can you talk to me about that, about just what you guys have created in terms of the care and the love and the commitment that you guys put into making the best customer experience?
Well, part of that's just capitalism working its way out over time. When you're successful, you get copied. But the honest truth, Michael, is for most of our history, so we've been around for, if you go back to the beginning of Safeway, 42 years. But the first 25 years of our existence, the supermarket competitors, they didn't pay any attention to us. They believed what that venture capitalists believed. Whole Foods is just a bunch of hippies selling food to other hippies. They're no threat. They didn't pay any attention to us. We just flew under the radar. It wasn't until we went to New York City and we opened up first our Chelsea store and then our Columbus Circle store that the media woke up to Whole Foods. I used to beg to get articles written about our company. Nobody wanted to write about us. And then all of a sudden, we had our 15 minutes of fame, so to speak, where the media got very interested in Whole Foods, and we got a lot of massive publicity. And that's when the supermarkets began to wake up to us and began to pick up our products and began to compete with us. You know what? They could have kicked our ass in the early days, but we weren't a little company anymore. We weren't so easy to kick around. And they began to copy us and began to try to underprice us. And so the challenge for Whole Foods as we've gotten larger is to keep who we are, our identity, while at the same time taking advantage of economies of scale, purchasing better, lowering our prices, trying to get rid of the whole paycheck moniker. One of the best things about the merger with Amazon is Whole Foods is able to think long-term again. And we've had three price reductions. We're doing a fourth one right now. And we're well on our way to getting rid of that. I mean, we're always going to be seen as more expensive by many people because we're always going to sell the highest quality foods available, and quality does cost more. But we're not going to get underpriced on the exact same items any longer. That's the goal, and Amazon is empowering us to do that over time. I would say almost any business could get their ass kicked by a competitor early on if they paid attention, but most of the time they fly under the radar. Microsoft could have been, IBM could have crushed Microsoft in the early days, but they didn't because they didn't take them serious. Same thing with Apple Computer. If you know the Netflix story, Blockbuster could have kicked Netflix's butt. Netflix tried to sell out to Blockbuster. I'm reading Reed Hastings' book about Netflix right now, in fact. They tried to sell out to him, but Blockbuster was too arrogant to buy them out. So that was a huge mistake. So the disruptors tend to be underestimated until it's too late to wipe them out. It happens again and again and again and again. So Amazon could have failed in the early days. They were nip and tuck in the early days, if you read the early stories about Amazon. And the dot-com bomb, they almost went under. And some people do go under, some people, but the survivors managed to fly under the radar long enough to get big enough where King Kong can't just take them out.
You know, we're in the midst of this election right now. And by the time this airs, the election will pass. But, you know, your book is all about conscious leadership. And we've seen leadership in our country go to extremes. And yet I feel like people are still longing for this sense of truth, the sense of community, and the sense of serving the greater good. And I want to just hear from you about how you guys communicate that, not only communicate the way that you serve the greater good, but how it is that you serve the greater good through buying from farmers who are using the best practices, buying local. Just talk me through some of that.
I'll talk in general, and then you can ask more specific questions if you want to dive deeper into any of this stuff. So first, I don't want to talk about politics because right now there's no more divisive topic in the United States than talking about politics. Whatever I say, I'm pretty sure half the people will hate my guts. So I've just learned to keep politics. I'm a public figure at Whole Foods, so I'm trying not to stir the pot in that regard. That being said, America needs conscious leaders desperately. And by conscious leaders, as we define it in our book, it's leaders that have a higher purpose, that lead with love, that have high integrity, that find win-win-win solutions. Right now, our politicians are at war with each other. They don't work together anymore. There's no win-win-win going on. It's win-lose, and it's trying to kill the other side. It's very, very divisive. We need conscious leaders in business, but we need them in politics. We need them in government. We need them in health. We need them in education. We need them in the military. We need them everywhere. And that's one of the reasons we wrote the book, was to try to wake people up. We need to evolve as a culture. We need to become more conscious. We need to become more caring, more loving, and more forgiving of those who disagree with us, more tolerant of differences. There are differences in America. We're not. And that's the beauty of America. There is diversity in America, and there's diversity in thought. There's different religions. And the United States is what it is because partly because we've had with notable failings in our past, but historically the country has had greater tolerance for different ideas, freedom of speech, freedom of liberty, things like that. And so we need conscious leaders. And I hope our book will inspire younger generation to do the practices that are in the book, because becoming more conscious, I think Malcolm Gladwell talked about mastery, to master some type of discipline. For example, you're a musician, and he talked about you got to put your 10,000 hours in.
10,000 hours, yeah.
Yeah. You've put a lot more time in your music than 10,000 hours, and so you're a deep master. But you know you had to do the work. Well, it's the same way with being a more conscious leader. You've got to do the work. Yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. So I still have a long way to go. I'm not going to hold myself up as some kind of enlightened being and has all the answers. But I will say I've been on this path a long time. I've learned many things. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've learned some things from them. Trying to pass what I've learned on that will help others to accelerate their own journey. That's the purpose of the book. Now, in terms of the things you're talking about, like Whole Foods with local, and why don't you just dive specifically into an area of the business you want me to explore a little bit more, and I'll talk about it.
I am a farmer. One of the things that we do here at Soulshine, our hotel here, is we grow organic rice. We grow organic fruits and vegetables to serve in our restaurants. And I know that it is challenging. It's challenging to do the work. It's challenging to meet the prices that work for me, but we have a commitment to doing it. So as I've seen you guys commit to farmers and having the best produce, I've always thought, how are you able to pull this off and still have it be at a reasonable price that any person can afford? And then how have you been able to just hold on to that, I guess, as a value that's really important to your customers?
So there's two parts to the answer to the question. The first one are our values, and how do you hold on to your values as you grow to become larger? The way you hold on to them is that you don't ever take them for granted. I mean, Whole Foods is, we got 100,000 people working for the company now, and every year we're getting, you know, new people come in and other people retire or leave. So you're always constantly having to develop the values in people. The culture attracts its own kind. You can never take your culture for granted. We have a program in Whole Foods we call Cultural Champions. We take people through, put them through an intensive training and certify them as a cultural champion, which means they understand our higher purpose, our six core values, as well as our 17 leadership principles that we've built the company around. And it's very important that the leaders embody the purpose, that they embody the values. You can talk all you want, but people pay a lot more attention to how you show up in the world than by what you say. Human beings, we are very good at ferreting out hypocrisy. We love to catch our leaders being hypocrites and liars because we can dismiss them. The leaders have to embody the higher purpose, the values. So if you want it to be living, you have to live it yourself. And you have to teach it constantly or it will tend to fade away. Now at Whole Foods, we've been doing it so long that it's institutionalized. I don't have to be quite as passionate about it as I used to be because others are beating the drums. We got a good community drum beating going on for our values. And of course, for the Amazon merger, our biggest challenge there is Amazon also has a powerful culture. And Whole Foods, you know, we have to hold on to who we are. It's like a marriage. You get married, you may not want to change, but you will change if you're going to stay married. So because there's a me, there's a you, and there's a we or a us. And that's what we have with Amazon. So we have to maintain who Whole Foods is. So the whole cultural question is particularly important to us now, 3 years in on this merger, is to be sure that we know that there's lots of the things about Amazon we love, but there are also things about Whole Foods that we don't want to have assimilated into Amazon. So there's first the culture parts, and then there's the how do you do this stuff. And what happens over time is that you build up intellectual capital. You build up the know-how because you're doing it and you get more skilled at it. It's our mastery discussion again. Whole Foods is a master of this stuff now because we've been doing it so long. We weren't any good at it at first. Our stores back then were crummy compared to our stores today. We just didn't know what we were doing, but we were determined to learn. And so we gained skills. We attracted very talented people to come work with the company. And they brought their knowledge and their skills into the company. And then there was a collective cultural intelligence, you might say, to the company, so that the skills of how to do produce, how to buy, how to merchandise, that all would be passed on. It became institutionalized. So what happens over time, if you're operating restaurants, how long have they been in operation?
Here, we've got two restaurants in about 10 years.
Okay. Are those restaurants better today than they were 10 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. They're better today than they were yesterday.
And 10 years from now, they'll be a lot better than they are today because you're going to continue to learn and get better, provided that the vision and the culture maintains its truth. The fact that your restaurants have been in existence for 10 years already speaks because you're like in the top 2 or 3% of businesses that survived 10%. There's a high fertility rate for new businesses. Most of them don't know what they're doing and they don't learn fast enough and they don't survive. So you're well on your way, although it's still hard. The thing that people don't understand until they get into business is hard. It's hard to do it well. It's not easy. I don't know. One of my frustrating things is you talk in college professors and intellectuals, they think business is easy. The stupid people are doing business. The smart people are in the universities. Couldn't be more wrong. It's very hard. That's a theoretical intelligence, but there's a practical intelligence. So you have to work with people. You have to deal with all the drama that's there. You have to continue to keep things on track. You have to deal with customers. You got people quitting on you. You supply chain problems. A supplier gets in trouble. What do? Do you help them out? Do they go out of business? It's complex. It's very hard, which is part of what I love about it. Because no matter how long I'm doing it, I'm still challenged. I keep learning. There's new things to learn. I've never gotten bored with it. It's always proven to be more interesting. So Whole Foods has just been doing it, and we just keep getting better at it. We still have our values and our culture and our mission. I suppose if those things eventually get extinguished over time, then Whole Foods will, you know, I can't work forever for one thing. I'll be leaving, and it'll be a real test then to whether the culture will be able to sustain itself as part of Amazon or whether it'll begin to be assimilated.
What does Whole Foods mean? Why did you call it Whole Foods?
Well, so then remember the original name was Safer Way, and that was Safeway, Safer Way. And then when we merged with another store called Clarksville Natural Grocery, who are also the co-founders of Whole Foods, they didn't want to be called Safer Way and we didn't want to be called Clarksville. So we had to come up with a new name. We worked into it backwards. It's like we didn't do this in any kind of professional way. We said, what are we? We're a market. We like the word market. Market sounds cool. This is back in 1980, right? Market sounds cool. It's like, what kind of market are we? Well, yeah, we're a food market, but what kind of food market are we? We're an organic food market. We thought about that. We're a natural food market, but we're also a whole foods market. And that, there, we didn't know anybody named that. And whole was a good word because whole earth, Stewart Brand's Whole Earth Provision Catalog, Whole Earth Catalog, had a huge impact on my generation. You have no idea. You asked how I'd read the Whole Earth Catalog, and it's like they had all this back to the land, and you had Mother Earth news, and Whole Earth was so cool. We couldn't call it Whole Earth. That was trademark. We could call ourselves Whole Foods. So honestly, we were inspired by Stewart Brand. I should give him credit. Both sides agreed. We had to open our store. We didn't have a name up until about a week before we opened up. And we said, we got to get a name. So we finally voted on it and Whole Foods won and we put a sign up and we were in business.
You know, one of the things that I love about Whole Foods is there's a real sense that I feel when I go into stores of community. Everything from the people that work there who are unique, they're able to express themselves in what they wear and their experience, their culture. There's such diversity in the stores, but also they're able to express themselves when you talk to them. That's what I love about the shopping experience there is it's more than just like, hey, where's the something, something, and they'll walk you to aisle 8 or whatever, but there's a conversation that happens, or someone who's working at a part of the store will talk to you really about, hey, we got this today and it's really awesome. I just cut this open. I want to try some, you know, and it feels like there's a humanity there. It feels like that the people who work in the stores have a sense of ownership, but it really feels like human. And I'd love to hear how you guys have created that, but our show is the Stay Human show. And the last thing I always ask everybody is, what does it mean to you to be human, John? And how do you hold on to your humanity, especially in these crazy times?
Yeah. So first of all, we're obviously like everybody else, we're being severely challenged by COVID. I mean, Whole Foods has had it better than most businesses because our sales have gone up. Our prepared foods have gone down, but pretty much everything else has gone up. But at what cost? I mean, our team members are all masked up. Our customers are masked up. Everybody's social distancing. The things you're talking about are really pre-COVID. In this reality, nobody's hugging each other. Everybody has to keep their distance. A lot of the humanity that you're talking about has been suspended, at least temporarily, because people are so scared of this virus. The things that make us human are being put on the back burner, so to speak. And I would say Whole Foods has made a lot of cultural deposits for many, many years of caring for our team members. We're making withdrawals now because, I mean, it's hard. They're not, our team members are not getting the same kind of nourishment emotionally that they have for most of their time. And it's beginning to, I see it now, it's beginning to really drag on people. They don't have the same enthusiasm. They're tired because they're not getting nurtured. They're not getting renewed. So let's talk pre-COVID and then we can talk post-COVID, because right now we're in suspension mode. And it's honestly, it's tearing the country apart. I don't know. I can't speak for the rest of the world because I haven't been outside of America, but it's been really hard on the United States. I don't know what it's like in Bali. I suspect it's different, but the United States, we got protests and riots, and Whole Foods has had a number of our stores broken into and damaged during the pandemic age. Our team members had to run away because they wouldn't get hurt. But were the things that we to stay human. So I'll get back to your question. First, it's about purpose, because human beings, we need purpose. We need things that we care about, that we're passionate about, that give our lives meaning. If you don't have that, and that can come from a lot of different areas. It can come from spirituality. It can come from family. It can come from our work. For some people, it comes from politics. It can come from environmental dedication and causes and movements and things like that. But we need purpose. And Whole Foods provides purpose for people. We have a deeper mission about nourishing people on the planet. And we've got a great track record from our foundations to the way we show up in the world with animal welfare and environmental sustainability that means we're walking our talk. Secondly, you have to care about people. If you want to stay human, the most human thing we are about is we love each other. We are social beings we need family, we need friends, we need community. And the hardest thing about the pandemic now is you're just not able to touch each other very much. I'm so sick of Zoom. We're doing this on Zoom, but I'm so Zoomed out. I mean, it's like I've been doing it for 8 months, and I'm back trying to connect with people again, even if I have to just touch elbows. but love is the most human thing we can do, and that's why we made it the second chapter in the book, Lead with Love, because love is not present enough in our corporations, in our organizations, mostly because people see love as weak. And the competitive elements of business are exaggerated. It's all seen as it's a war, it's a jungle, it's Darwinian survival, it's some kind of game with winners and losers. And that's all part of it, but that's not the main part of it. It's mostly about creating value for other people and doing that with teams and colleagues that are bonded together to create that value. And love is what holds it all together. And that's why I don't see love. Love is an emotion. Love is a feeling. But it's so much more than that. And what we try to emphasize in the book, that love is primarily a skill, a set of skills that we develop. We have to become more skillful in generosity and gratitude and appreciation and care, compassion, forgiveness. These are all aspects of love. And we can get better at them if we will practice them. So people spend too much time thinking love is just this emotion that you feel in certain circumstances. I have found it much more constructive in life to see it as love is something, it's a set of skills that we can get better at. We can become more skillful at loving. I'm a lot more skillful in relationships today than I was 40 years ago because I've been practicing. My wife tells stories about John was used to be a very bad communicator with people because he was, you know, he's such a thinking type. He couldn't empathize with people well. And he started reading all these books about communication and practicing them. And then over time, he's actually become quite good at it. So I think love is very important. Purpose and love. And I always say Whole Foods has tremendous loyalty from our team member base. The people who work for our companies for decades. It was one of the things that shocked Amazon when they got in there. And they found out everybody had been working there. Anybody who hadn't worked there 10 years, you're still kind of new to the company. And they asked why. And I said, well, because we give people purpose and we give them love. And that's what human beings crave the most, purpose and love. And so many people tell me they came to work for Whole Foods as a part-time cashier to earn some money while they were doing something else. And then they just never left. Why would they want to leave? They have a career. They develop. They have friends. They have meaning. They have purpose. We create a great community for people. So we were named one of the 100 best companies to work for 20 consecutive years. It's one of the things I'm most proud of. We stopped doing it when we merged with Amazon, but we had 20 years in a row.
It's so inspiring just to hear your story and to hear the evolution of Whole Foods, and just to hear that love and that commitment to communication and bringing people together is still at the root of what you guys do. And I just want to say thank you for being on the show, but also thank you for making it a lot easier for musicians to be healthy as we travel from city to city. You wouldn't believe how many Whole Foods that I have visited. And it's always a great experience. And we always know that we're going to come out of there with stuff that's going to keep us going to the next town. So we're super grateful. And thank you for just being this example of the kind of leaders that I agree that we really need right now. So if folks want to get the book, it's called Conscious Leadership, Elevating Humanity Through Business. And my guest has been John Mackey today on the Stay Human podcast. Thank you very much, John. And I hope to see you in person sometime very soon. I'm going to give you a big hug.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for all the great work you're doing in the world. You're making a huge difference and you've inspired me. I'm going to have to make a trip to Bali so I can stay at your hotel and eat your food and connect with you in person.
Right on. All right. Thanks, John. Peace.